Hello, this is Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article, Williams to Serve as Interim Mayor, by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Ward 1 Alderman Ricky Williams Jr. made history Tuesday night. He will become the city's first African American mayor. The Danville City Council voted Tuesday night for Williams, 40, to serve as acting mayor from November 6, 2018 through May 7, 2019. These 6 months are the remaining time in Mayor Scott Eisenhower's term. Eisenhower is leaving the office early to take a job as village administrator in Rantoul. Eisenhower started looking at other jobs with the mayor position uncertainty due to the referendum on the November 6th ballot to change the city's form of government to a city manager and part-time mayor. Eisenhower submitted his resignation, which is effective at 6 p.m. November 6th. At that time, Williams is expected to be sworn in. Ward 5 Alderman Mike Purr was the only alderman that voted present for the vote. All discussions about the acting mayor position were in closed session. The council met in closed session for about 2.5 hours. Ward 7 Alderman Steve Foster said about half that time was spent on acting mayor discussion. The council also had a piece of property, clerical contract amendment, and Public Works interim director employment contract on the closed session agenda. Williams was one of five who had expressed interest in becoming acting mayor. The others included Ward 4 Alderwoman Sharon McMahon, Purr, Ward 6 Alderman Steve Nichols, and Foster. "I'm very, very humbled," Williams said about being named acting mayor. He said he dreamed about becoming mayor since he was 18 years old. He said he'll work with the citizens and community to be fair and honest. Williams has been Project Success Executive Director since June of 2013 and has been an alderman since 2009. We'll continue next with the article, Ameren Warns of Utility Scams, by Mary Wyckoff. Danville. A team with Ameren Illinois will hit the streets today to alert small and family-owned businesses about utility scams. The outreach is part of a public education campaign in central and southern Illinois as part of Utility Scam Awareness Week, which began on Monday. Employees will visit 20 to 30 Danville area businesses in the downtown area to discuss the common warning signs of a scam. Each business will receive scam awareness magnets and flyers. They will start at Vermilion Advantage at 15 North Walnut Street around 1 p.m. The most common utility scam scenario involves a person who poses as an Ameren Illinois representative, calls a customer, and threatens to disconnect service if the customer does not make an immediate payment. Small businesses are common targets because they yield higher dollar amounts than individual residential accounts. Since Ameren Illinois began tracking utility scam metrics in 2014, more than 4,000 customers have reported being contacted by a scammer, resulting in upwards of $140,000 paid out. In 2018 alone, more than 7,700 customers have been contacted to date. "This is the second year for the canvassing," said Stacy Young, supervisor for community relations. Last year, it was part of the National Utility Scam Awareness Week in November. "All week, we'll be talking to local businesses and customers about scams, which are increasingly more prevalent," she said. "A lot of customers are being impacted by these utility scams." "Small and family-owned businesses are most often victims," Young said. "A scammer will call at the noon rush and tell the owner that he is in imminent danger of being disconnected. The owner, who's distracted, might panic and become a victim." "We don't want our customers to continue to fall victim to these scams," she said. In addition to visiting businesses, Ameren will share educational materials with residential customers through social media and work with partner organizations to educate the public about how to spot the warning signs of a scam and avoid falling victim. Here are some of the ways that scammers work. Utility scammers offer fabricated services or threaten to disconnect power in an attempt to defraud both residential and business customers out of money. Anyone is susceptible to a utility scam, but both elderly customers and those who may not speak English as a primary language are generally more vulnerable. Many scammers will try to target small businesses during peak hours, knowing that a service disruption can negatively impact the bottom line. The most commonly reported utility scam scenario involves a perpetrator who calls a residential or business customer and threatens to disconnect service if payment is not received immediately. It may seem intuitive that it's a utility scam, but discerning real from fake is often difficult. And nowadays, scammers use advanced tactics, for example, recordings mimicking the Ameren Illinois customer service line, to appear legitimate, leading potential victims to believe the requests are valid. There are several red flags that may signal a utility scam. Keep an eye and ear out for threats to disconnect service without immediate payment. Ameren Illinois will never threaten to disconnect service in this manner. Disconnect notices are sent only in the mail, and Ameren Illinois makes every effort to work with the customer before getting to this point. Unsolicited requests for personal and proprietary information. No one should ever call you unsolicited and request credit card information from you, or your social security number, address, or anything pertaining to your utility bill. Non-Ameren Illinois members. Utility scammers oftentimes attempt to replicate the area code, but the legitimate Ameren Illinois numbers are 1-800-755-5000 and 1-800-232-2477. Constant intimidation and pressure to make a payment. If the request is legitimate, the Ameren team member can always wait. Nobody should ever coerce you into payment. Requests to pay with green dot cards, money packs, or other prepaid credit cards. These are attractive options for scammers, as it only takes a bit of information from the back of the card to irreversibly drain funds. However, Ameren Illinois will never request payment in this manner. Although not as common, Ameren Illinois also has seen instances of door-to-door utility scams. These scammers aren't necessarily threatening power disconnection, but instead peddling fake deals or promotions in exchange for personal or account information. On the surface, it might seem obvious that these demands for payment are fraudulent, but scammers are using increasingly advanced tactics and they are very convincing, Richard J. Mark, chairman and president of Ameren Illinois, said in a news release. This week, we're shining a spotlight on the problem, while providing our residential and business customers with tools and resources to protect themselves from being scammed. Mark reminds customers Ameren Illinois will never demand payment over the phone, visit a customer at home to discuss an account, or ask for a customer's personal information. We'll head now to the article, Shattered Hearts. Many horses show how disrespect can hurt. By Mary Wyckoff. Potomac. The children sat quietly while Mary Remol related the story of Mr. Buttons, a miniature horse with a damaged leg. "It's a miracle he's here today," she told the students at Potomac Elementary School. Remol, co-founder of Hoods of Hope, used Mr. Buttons as an example of what can happen when other horses, and people, don't show respect to each other. Mr. Buttons, 4, and miniature horse Winnie, 5, both wearing 4 little tennis shoes, stood patiently while Remol and helper Debbie Strong talked about the importance of respect. The incident with Mr. Buttons happened about a year and a half ago when Mary and her husband Stan, who own the Equine Therapy Ranch next to the grade school, went out of town for the day. Mr. Buttons had been at the ranch only 2 weeks, so they left him safely in his own corral, thinking he was secure. The Remolds don't know what happened, but when they returned, Mr. Buttons was out of his broken corral and was shivering in pain and fear at the far end of the pasture. For some reason, the big horses had broken into his corral and chased him around. Whether they were playing or picking on him, the Remolds will never know. Mr. Buttons ended up with a shattered back leg and spent 3 days at the Purdue University Veterinary Clinic, where staff saved his leg by applying a cast. However, he doesn't have full use of it. While the students quietly absorbed Mr. Buttons' story, Remmel turned it into a lesson on how to treat others with respect. Horses live in herds, and there's a pecking order, she said, adding, they do not show respect to each other sometimes. Those bigger horses did not show respect to Mr. Buttons, she told the children. It's not fair. He didn't do anything or deserve anything like that, she said. When Remmel saw Mr. Buttons in pain, her heart was broken. And it's the same when people are disrespectful to each other. Your words could be shattering someone's heart, she said. She suggested the students stay in their herd with friends who are good to them. Also, they should take a big breath, like horses do, before saying something to shatter someone's heart. Think of poor Mr. Buttons, she said. Strong and Remmel explained the meaning of respect. Recognize everyone is different. Show empathy. Have self-control, think first. Be polite, encourage others, connect with someone, be truthful. Remmel also distributed Hooves of Hope's bracelets to children, who had a chance to pet each horse, and gave respect postcards and posters to the teachers. The items were made possible through a Cattle Foundation grant. Remmel would like to bring the horses to other schools in the area to share the lesson about respect. On December 1st, the miniatures will appear at a Breakfast with Reindeer event from 7:30 a.m. to noon at Potomac Elementary School. It's open to the public. To learn more about Hooves of Hope, you can go to www.facebook.com/pg/hoovesofhope and www.hoovesofhope.com. We'll go now to the death notices. Carolyn Suzanne Courtney passed away on Saturday, October 13th, 2018. Entombment rites of Christian burial will be conducted at 10 a.m. on Friday, October 19th, at Resurrection Cemetery at 818 Wen Street in Danville. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center is assisting the family with arrangements. Florence P. Keller, 85, of Danville, formerly of Indianola, Illinois, passed away on Tuesday, October 16th. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, October 19th, at Robinson's Chapel in Catlin, Illinois. Burial in Michael's Cemetery in Indianola. Visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 18th, at Robinson's Chapel. Memorials to Pleasant Meadows Nursing Home in Chrisman. Grace E. Melton, 89, of Tilton, Illinois, passed away on Sunday, October 14th. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 18th, at Robinson's Chapel in Catlin. Burial at Greenwood Cemetery. Visitation from 10 to 11 a.m. on Thursday at Robinson's Chapel in Catlin. Memorials to the American Diabetes Association. Philip D. Reif, 67, formerly of Danville, passed away on October 5th, 2018. Per Phillips's wishes, his body will be donated to a medical research facility. A memorial service will be at 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 18th, at the First Assembly of God at 428 North Walnut Street in Danville. David Matthew Winchester, 71, passed away on October 14th, 2018. A graveside committal with military rites will be at 1 p.m. on Friday, October 19th, at Danville National Cemetery. A celebration of life will follow at 2 p.m. till 7 p.m. at Sarge's Tap at 409 East Main Street in Danville. Memorial contributions may be made in his name to Vermilion County Animal Shelter, where they got their dog, Coda. Robert C. Campbell, 92, of Oakwood, passed away on October 14th. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. on Thursday, October 18th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Funeral service will be at 2 p.m. at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. William Ashby, 60, of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, October 16, 2018. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. Royal Litch, 68, of Danville, passed away on Monday, October 15th. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. We'll now head over to today's News Gazette, where a Danville area teacher has been featured as the Teacher of the Week. Meet Miranda Simmons, an 11-year-old veteran at Salt Fork Junior High School, previously Jamaica Junior High, prior to Catlin and Jamaica schools' consolidation in 2015. She teaches 6th grade physical science, 8th grade earth science, and STEM classes for 7th and 8th graders. "I love STEM, and so do my students," said Simmons, whose 7th graders recently wrapped up a project designing and building doll furniture out of cardboard, and whose 8th graders are working on building mechanisms with robotics kits. "They love building things with their hands. They do get frustrated at times, and it's hard not to jump in. But I sit back and let them work through the problem. When you see them working together, and problem-solving, and being proud of their accomplishments, it's a great feeling." Her inspiration to become a teacher. Michael Henry, a math teacher at Rossville Alvin School. "He really made math relevant and showed us how it applied to real life. He believed we could do it and gave us the confidence to believe in ourselves. And that's what I tried to do with my kids." When Simmons isn't in the classroom, she's walking her rescue dog, Kona, a Staffordshire Terrier, doing yard work, or working on her Reef Blue 1993 Ford Mustang. "I've always been a gearhead," said the Alvin native, who has owned them since high school. "I've rebuilt engines and done all the modifications, and I've always enjoyed going to drag races. That's my people, and that's how you get street cred with the kids." Why she loves teaching junior high schoolers. They can take care of themselves physically. You don't have to wipe their snotty noses. When they get into sixth grade, they're just starting to think abstractly. That's when a lot of brain growth is happening, and you can impact that. Her favorite tactic for getting her students' attention. "I try to keep up with the things they're into and talk about things they can relate to in their language. And doing a dance move every once in a while doesn't hurt either." For a few updates on what's going on in the area, we'll now go to the section Community Briefs. In Danville, rules explained. The City of Danville Human Relations Commission will sponsor the do's and don'ts of the Parking Program for Persons with Disabilities workshop from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on Thursday at City Hall at 17 West Main Street. Bill Bogdan, Disability Liaison to Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White, will speak. The workshop will include how to report abuse of this program. The workshop is free and open to the public. For information, call 217-431-2280. In Catlin, Lodge Serving Meal. The 4th annual Catlin Masonic Lodge Chicken Noodle Day has been set for 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday at the Lodge at 107 North Sandusky Street. The cost is $8 for adults and $5 for children 8 years and younger. Tickets may be purchased in advance at ERH Enterprises in Westville, or call 267-2331. Deliveries are available by calling or texting Sean McBride at 474-8689. In Westville, Church Serving Chili. Westville's Trinity United Church of Christ at 311 East Moses Avenue will serve its annual chili supper prior to the Westville versus Georgetown Ridge Farm Coal Bucket football game from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday in the Fellowship Hall in the lower level. The game will be played in Georgetown. A supper consists of chili, chicken noodle soup may be substituted, crackers, dessert, and drinks. Grilled hot dogs will be available for $2 each. Donation is $7 for adults, $3 for children 3 to 11 years old. 2 years and younger eat free. Tickets will be available at the door. And now we'll head over to the sports section for some news in local sports. We'll go to the article, Vikings Fall Short. Defensive game plan almost worked for Danville, by Chad Dare. Champaign. Danville first-year coach Brent Lockhart knew his Vikings would need a complete defensive performance to upset the second-seeded Mattoon Green Wave. This season, the Vikings were 8-2 in matches, where they held their opponents to 2 goals or less. "We have given up a lot of goals," said Lockhart, whose team was also 0-13 when allowing 3 or more goals. "We knew that we had to play defense to stay in this game." For the game's first 60 minutes, things were falling into place for Danville. Mattoon had just a 1-0 lead on a goal from Jacob Wetter in the 46th minute, but the Green Wave eventually found a few cracks in the Danville defensive wall, scoring 2 more on its way to a 3-0 victory in the IHSA Class 2A regional semifinal at Champaign Centennial. "In the first half, I thought we had an excellent effort," said Lockhart, as the match was tied 0-0. "It kept us in the game. It was kind of my tactic to go into the second, the last 20 minutes, and try to attack it and get it back. We ran a little too short and a little too late and maybe a little too tired." The Vikings, who finished the season with an 8-16 record, were completely committed to their game plan. "We were ready to play," said Danville senior defender Hui Lei. "It doesn't matter how good they were or what their record was. We had to play our game. We didn't want to play their game. Those first 60 minutes were exactly how we wanted to play. We did our best, but we couldn't keep up with them." While the Vikings stuck to a defensive approach, they still had a couple of scoring chances in the final 10 minutes of the first half. "I was happy going into halftime at 0-0, but if you have that one goal lead, then you really focus on defense," Lockhart said. "We had a couple of good looks, and they couldn't find the net." Lei admitted any type of lead would have changed the match for the Vikings. "It would have given us more confidence, and it would have been a boost to keep going even when we got tired," he said. Most of Danville's scoring chances came as a result of a counterattack with a long ball to senior forward Kevin Sanchez. "We knew if we had all of our offense play back with the defense, it would be hard to get down the field," Lockhart said. "We knew a couple of their defenders that were really strong. We tried to play around them and leave a little gap. Hopefully we could push it all the way down the field, and that Kevin could handle a little bit of it until the rest of us, our offense could push up." Wetter scored his second goal with over 17 minutes remaining, and Mattoon put the match away with a goal from senior Jake Gear, off a pass from Shane Gear in the 65th minute. The Green Wave advances to play Mohammed Seymour, a 3-0 winner of Champaign Centennial, in the other semifinal for the IHSA Class 2A Regional Championship on Saturday. Sanchez and Lei were 2 of the 8 seniors on the Danville roster, playing their final game for the Vikings, who had only a couple of returning starters from last year. "This year was the first time that a lot of us had played together," Lei said. "We had a lot of younger guys step up this year." We'll now go back to the News Gazette for the article, "Officer Says Blood Trail from Body Led to Suspect," by Noelle McGee, Danville. Shortly before 7 a.m. on November 25, 2014, Danville Police Officer Nathan Howie was called to the city's east side for a possible murder. When the 24-year veteran cop arrived, he saw a man's body lying in a yard on the north side of the house at 502 North Griffin Street. The man was unresponsive. Howie later followed a trail of blood from the man's body to a small apartment complex at 1227 Clarence Street, a short distance directly west from where he laid. As he followed the trail, he observed blood on a chain-link fence by the complex and blood leading up and into a window on apartment 4. When he looked inside the window, quote, "I could see blood all over the living room and kitchen area," said Howie, who testified to those events on the first day of Theron M. Price's murder trial on Tuesday. Later, As he interviewed residents of the complex, he saw a woman leaving apartment 2, Howie testified. She returned with a Theron Price, said Howie, who identified Price in the courtroom. They both said they resided in the apartment 2, the officer continued, adding Price was wearing a Mervis Industries work shirt with his name on it. He said neither he nor the woman provided police any information about the murder at the time. Price, 42, of Danville, faces 3 counts of first-degree murder in the fatal shooting of William Newbern III, whose body was found 2 days before Thanksgiving, nearly 4 years ago. The preliminary autopsy result showed Mr. Newman died of multiple gunshot wounds. A warrant for Price's arrest was issued on July 22, 2015. He has been in jail on a $1 million bond since then. A jury of 7 men, 2 women, and a male and female alternate were selected on Monday, and the trial began Tuesday afternoon. The trial, which is expected to last 2 weeks, resumes at 9 a.m. today. The prosecutors believe the 42-year-old victim was shot the evening before, based on when his cell phone activity stopped. In her opening statement, Assistant Illinois Attorney General Haley Brookert said she and her colleague William Bryant, who are trying the case due to a conflict of interest with the Vermilion County State's Attorney Office, plan to present evidence that Price and Mr. Newbern spent the afternoon drinking and arguing, and were still together in the victim's apartment when his girlfriend left them. Mr. Newbern's last outgoing call and text were at 5:54 and 5:56 p.m., respectively, and his phone showed no activity after 6:05 p.m. And calls and texts that his girlfriend sent him later went unanswered. Brookert also said the evidence will show that Price's work jacket and the driver's side door and steering wheel of his car tested positive for gunshot residue, and that his blood was found on his jacket and left boot. However, Assistant Public Defender Rana Mintz, who is representing Price along with her colleague Aaron Brackey, told jurors that her client didn't kill his friend William Newbern. "You will see there's more to this picture," Mintz said. "There's a reason for every piece of evidence the state will present." Mr. Newbern's mother, Sharon Young, and another woman wept softly as Howie and 4 other witnesses testified. The other witnesses included Officer Cliff Hegg, who said he also followed the blood trail to Mr. Newbern's apartment. When he found the front door locked, he kicked it in to see if anyone was inside. While it was empty, he did find a red substance that appeared to be blood on the floor. Also, Virginia Coe, who testified that she and her children used to live on North Griffin Street. She said that shortly before 7 a.m. on November 25, 2014, she opened her front door and saw a body lying in a yard across the street. She and her boyfriend, Patrick Brown, went to check on him, but "we didn't feel nothing." Coe said she went back to her house to get her phone to call police and a blanket to cover the man so that her kids wouldn't see him. She said she hadn't heard anything unusual the night before. Also, a Danville firefighter, Sean Paisley, said he was the initial first responder to the scene. He removed the blanket and checked for a pulse, but didn't find one. He said the man was cold and stiff, and he observed a puncture wound on the man's torso and a cut on his arm. He also said he found an ID in the man's back pocket belonging to William Newbern. Also, paramedic Tim Lawson testified he determined the man was deceased after discovering he wasn't breathing, had no pulse, and no heartbeat. He had obvious rigor mortis, Lawson added. That's all the time we have for today's reading. Once again, this has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. As always, thanks for joining me, and I look forward to the next time we read together.